Good morning and welcome to day three of this week's special editions of Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Kaliole Colonna. We're taking this week to talk about COVID-19. Each day we are opening the lines to hear from you. Tell us about what you're adjusting to, how you're adjusting to this new way of life. Every day there are new developments and things can feel like they are moving way too fast. And we want to be of help to the community by addressing some of the issues that you're concerned with. Are you out of work? Are you working at home? If you're a parent, how are you looking after your kids and maintaining their schoolwork? Do you have elderly parents? What are their needs? Are you in need of resources and help? We are here for you. This week, we plan to have officials, community leaders, mental health experts, medical professionals, and many more to help you get the information you need. And it all starts with you. What has your experience been? Many of us have a lot more time on our hands, so what are you doing with yours? Email us, letstalk@kunm.org, tweet using the hashtag letstalknm, or give us a call at 277-KUNM. That's 277-5866. Don't forget, email us, letstalk@kunm.org, and tweet us at hashtag letstalknm to join in the conversation. Well, it's been 2 days since Governor Lujan Grisham announced the stay-at-home order. And while people are self-isolating, sheltering at home, or in quarantine, it's important to remember people in need. I've been interviewing many people for the Your New Mexico Government podcast, and I can say that one of the overwhelming effects of this situation that is having on people is the new reality is giving people perspective. People are beginning to see what is truly important, not only for themselves, but for us all. Hence, people are helping in any way that they can. It's called mutual aid, where anyone who needs it gets help. My first guests are Celinda Guerrero and Zoe Kraft, organizers with the Albuquerque Mutual Aid Coalition. Good morning, Celinda and Zoe. Thanks for being with me.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Wonderful. This is really good. First, let me ask, how are you all doing? Are you all taking care? And are your families safe?
Yes, this is Celinda, and I think we're taking all the precautions that we need to right now and staying as safe as possible.
Good. Very good. Zoe?
Here, yeah. So my family seems to be, we're just still kind of just trying to adjust to a lot of these changes, but we're trying to take as many precautions as we can. And I think overall we're doing pretty well.
Good. Very good. Very good. We're all adjusting to this new way of life. Now, let me ask, Celinda, you posted a few days ago that just the first week of the ABQ Mutual Aid work, you fed over 500 people. That sounds like a lot of work. How are you feeling today?
Yeah, we're feeling great. We've been able to find a sustainable pace for all of the volunteers. And we're reaching approximately 50 families a day. Which the families have ranged from single people folks all the way up to families of 8 and 10.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of people you're doing. Now, how does this work? If I need groceries or other supplies, or if I have a vehicle and some spare time, how can I get on your list if I'm in need?
So you can visit the Fight for Our Lives website. It's FFOL.org.
Okay.
And they click on Albuquerque Mutual Aid. And there's a form about halfway down the page for requesting a care package.
Wonderful.
And what we're striving to do is help to support folks who aren't having access to things. So folks that are confined to their homes because it's not safe for them to be out or exposed, immune compromised folks, people that don't have transportation to get to stores, large families with small children. And so we're trying to do our best to be able to service those folks who don't have access. We're also getting some requests from unsheltered community.
Okay. What type of requests are you getting there?
For the same types of things. Soap, hand sanitizer, hygiene products, food that can be prepared easily while on the go. Most of the families have been requesting things like diapers and wipes, toilet paper, paper towels, bleach, soap. And then, of course, food is in high demand right now.
All the basic needs. Now, this mutual aid effort, Zoe, answer this for me. This mutual aid effort is under the banner of Fight for Our Lives. That's a youth-led organization here in Albuquerque. When and how did you all decide to launch this mutual aid system?
So Fight for Our Lives has existed for a long time as a youth-led organization with the goal of really upholding accountability in leadership and with the goal of also promoting strategic social change and raising awareness. And I believe that really as soon as COVID-19 generally started to hit the news in the United States and we started to hear of cases in New Mexico while restrictions were beginning to be imposed, we really just contacted people throughout our networks who we trusted and began to kind of build a system that we hoped could help folks who don't have access to various resources.
You definitely did build that system because you're helping people, 500 people last week. Now, did you and other organizations have experience with this sort of network mobilization, or are you all just kind of making it up as it goes? And another question for you, what is your biggest lesson that you all have learned thus far?
So I think in a lot of ways we do have experience with mobilizing our networks just because previously these organizations have all helped to host various events or protests or different marches. So I think we do have experience in quick mobilization. This is definitely different than some of the work that we've done in the past. But I think that our previous experience has definitely been helpful in this quick mobilization effort that was needed.
Okay, I like that. Now, speaking of experience, we've got a call that we're going to go to. I think this is a person asking for expertise, particularly expertise in your field. Talafia in Santa Fe, welcome to the show.
Hi, this is Reverend Talitha Arnold.
Talitha.
I get called lots of things,
I
but
apologize.
My name is Talitha. Thank you very much for the show, and also thank you for helping people to stay, keep people connected. I'm the pastor at the United Church of Santa Fe in Santa Fe, and we have been doing a number of things, not only to care for the people of the congregation, but also to keep our connections and support for the wider community. So we're doing some fundraising for some of the area agencies. But one thing I wanted to share with you is that we have an ongoing relationship with three of the three homeless shelters for the homeless here in Santa Fe, where on a regular basis we take people make food at their homes and take it to the shelter, Interfaith Shelter, Casa Familia, and St. E's. In order to truly honor the edict to stay at home and not go out unless you need to, et cetera, what we're doing now is inviting the people from the congregation who would normally have been making the food at their home and then taking it to the shelter or whatever, is to ask them to donate to the church, and then we are contracting with some of the local businesses, local restaurants in Santa Fe, to provide provide the meals. For example, we've got an ongoing relationship with the Interfaith Shelter, and for the next 4 weeks, we will do at least one lunch a day, getting the supplies from a local restaurant, and we'll be feeding 125 people.
That's wonderful.
So what we're trying to do is to make sure that, number one, we want to keep the community, our own the congregation, connected. We want to provide people a way to respond to this crisis, but we also want to make sure that we continue to care for the wider community.
Yes.
And that means, so this is a way of providing care for the most vulnerable, namely many of the people who are homeless, and also helping to keep small businesses alive and active.
That's very important.
So that's one idea that we've got a number of other things going on, but that I just wanted to share that idea in case there are other faith communities or other communities that wanted to think about how do you make those connections between social agencies and also keeping small businesses going.
I want to thank you for that and thank you for all the work you're doing. And that leads me to a greater question for both you, Celinda and Zoe. what's your advice to folks who see a need in the community and they think, somebody should really organize the people to step in here? Like, are you all in touch with Santa Fe Mutual Aid and other networks in New Mexico? We just heard the Reverend talk about all the work that they're doing up in Santa Fe. Is there any organization, is there any way to kind of connect all of the people in all the different communities in the state who want to work together to help people?
Well, a couple things. One is that the New Mexico Conference of Churches is doing a lot of coordinating of what the needs are, and they have a good pulse on both the cities but also smaller communities, because that's oftentimes where congregations are. We're also working through, working in Santa Fe, we're working through the Santa Fe Community Foundation, because they too have a good pulse on the overall community of Santa Fe and northern New Mexico in that regard. So those would be a couple ideas that I would have.
Celinda, are there other ideas? Is anyone working to try to coordinate a network amongst people in the state?
Yeah, so actually we are connected to the Santa Fe group that's doing mutual aid up there. They are one of the nonprofit grassroots groups just like us. We have had lots of experience in this. You know, due to conditions that have existed before coronavirus, we've been organizing around community defense and mutual aid. And so this is not a new project for us. At all of our events, we always feed folks and, you know, up to 200 people at a time sometimes. We work in coalition with John Brown Breakfast Club, who does feeding all week long to unsheltered community. So this is, you know, these are not new projects or perspectives. I think if somebody does want to get involved, though, and does not have that background and experience, they should connect with groups that are already doing the work so that they can have a better understanding about the structure, about the things, the steps necessary so that we keep people safe. So we want to make sure, you know, that we're taking all the precautions necessary for people's safety. So, for example, our group is using gloves, using masks. We're washing down all of our prep tables regularly with Clorox water. We're making sure that we don't have a lot of interaction of volunteers with the food. So just taking those steps to make sure that people are protected, but also protecting folks' information. I want people to know that we take security very seriously. So if they fill out a form with Albuquerque Mutual Aid, we are protecting that information, and there's only a few people who have access to that information. And that's our dispatch folks that are comprised of just about four people. And so we're making sure that everybody is protected, both their information along with their health, all the way through every step, and our volunteers, so that they are not getting exposed either. Well, they don't have any human contact while they're doing drop-offs. They drop things off on the porch for folks, so they're not actually touching anybody. They're not having interactions out in the community.
Okay.
And so these are just different kinds of things that we take, you know, into account as we're doing this organizing. But it's really important that people who want to get involved, that they have that groundwork, that understanding of how to make an operation like this flow in a way that's safe for everybody involved.
Okay.
And I think being involved with experienced organizers is the benefit that people will have if they want to engage.
Okay. Okay. Now, I want to ask you this. We got to go to break pretty shortly, but what concerns are you hearing from community members since yesterday's stay-at-home order? Did your calls that you were receiving, did they ramp up?
So we have had an increase in requests this week, but I think a lot of it, too, has to do with more people learning about our program and having less access. You know, as we've gone out to, because we do the shopping for the distribution with the donations. And so as we've been kind of out and doing that big shopping that's necessary, we were still yesterday still seeing people out. So I'm really interested in what's to come next, because it seems to me that folks are still kind of moving around. There was a little bit less traffic, but you know, I'm wondering how we can support community and helping them to shelter in place. Like, what other tools are needed for that support? I know that decision makers have been making announcements all week, but I'm wondering if it's reaching all community who's not tied into media.
I don't want to cut you off.
Our unsheltered folks.
I don't mean to cut you off, but I've got to move to a quick break. We'll be back shortly. You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico special series on COVID-19. If you want to call, call us up at 277-5866.
Thank you to Khalil for guiding us through folks' questions and comments on the coronavirus this morning. I'm Nash Jones, host of KUNM's Morning Edition. And I just want to take a moment during the break here to also thank those of you who have stepped up to donate during our quiet drive this morning. That's Thomas and Eileen Paez, Stacy Geller and Jonathan Frenzen, Susan and Edward Olson, Jeremy and Elizabeth Anderson, and Marlene and Lance Gray of Penasco. These folks recognize how essential KUNM is at this moment when you want to connect, but you need to do so at a distance. If you see the value in what we're doing this morning on the call-in show, I'm going to ask that you consider giving too, in any amount that you're able, online, during our quiet drive at KUNM.org. And if you're waiting till later in the day or the week to make your move, heads up that we've got a $500 challenge grant going on this hour, thanks to the generosity of an anonymous donor in Taos. If we get to 10 donors this hour, we get an additional $500. We've gotten to 5 so far, so we need you too. With that, let's get back to Let's Talk New Mexico, live from Studio A here at KUNM.
And thank you, Nash. Thank you very much for that. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Khalil Le Colonna. Our focus today, of course, COVID-19. What gives you hope in the midst of this scary pandemic? What gaps do you still see in your community where people aren't getting their needs met? Call in now, 277-KUNM. That's 277-5866. We're also on Twitter and use the hashtag Let's Talk NM. Some questions for our listeners if you're out there. How are you coping with the anxieties and sudden life changes that this has brought? And how are you staying busy and getting creative about keeping up with loved ones from a distance? In the first segment, we had Celinda Guerrero and Zoe Kraft from the Albuquerque Mutual Aid Foundation. But also joining us by phone is Shell Sanchez, Director of Cultural Services for the City of Albuquerque. Good morning, Shell. How are you?
I'm well. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. You know, we're all maintaining amidst this paradigm shift and reality change for us all. So can you tell me, what are you and the city working on this week?
Well, that's a big question, because there's a lot of people in the city that are still at work because we provide so many essential services. For my department, things have changed a lot because we're used to being with the public. So, but we're still in charge of a lot of collections, like animals and plants and things that we need to keep alive, and our art collections and our collections of books in our libraries. So we're still hard at that work. Okay. And then we're pushing out things through social media and our website.
Okay.
To try to help you keep your kids entertained at home.
Yes, I know a lot of parents who are having a difficult time with that. I do not envy them. Now, your office works with entrepreneurs and artists here, many people who are maybe considered non-essential businesses and people who are self-employed. How have they been impacted since the big COVID-19 slowdown?
Well, you know, I would never consider artists non-essential, so we'll have to start right there. I think what all of our artists are doing are trying to find a new way and new avenues to connect people and to help us understand where we are right now. So we're trying to figure out the ways to best support them. And some of that will be rolling out soon. And then also we have to have a longer response. You know, this is not a two-week crisis for us and for our gig artists. They have to figure this out over the next 4 weeks, 6 weeks, and 12 weeks because of the amount of income they've lost.
Do you think that as a result of this, having to reconfigure things, oftentimes in times of necessity and lack and need, ingenuity comes? Do you think that people are going to begin to create new business models for self-employed creative types, for artists? Do you think the city will come up with new programs as a result of this?
I think absolutely. You know, those of us that work in creative fields or have a background in the arts, we know that constraint is one of the major sources of creativity and invention. And I think we are all really understanding the power of constraint right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this is hard time, and because we have to respond to immediate needs. But I think the long term of what comes up will be very interesting. But that's the more intellectual side. I'm more interested in finding ways to connect people to their resources and to respond to lost income and lost revenue, like right now.
Okay, so speaking of that, how are you thinking about those small businesses bouncing back after the outbreak is over? Like, what new models will arise from invention surfacing during this time of necessity?
Well, I mean, in the very short term, we have lots of arts organizations in our community, and we're looking at their contracts, because the city puts about $1 million through the mayor's office and city council into arts organizations, which then also goes into artists. So we've revisited all of those contracts, figured out where maybe we need to adjust scope or the timeline so we can keep that money moving into the community. And then looking at what the city can do once we start moving back to put additional money into arts organizations and creative projects.
What can people do themselves to help support the arts during this time?
Well, there's a lot of artists that are musicians that are streaming concerts, and you can give donations. There's artists always that are selling their work online. So your favorite artists, find them on Instagram and, you know, consider buying some of their work. So artists are already out there. They've been doing this for a long time. You know, they're on Instagram, they're on Etsy. Artists have their own web pages. Our local musicians are streaming from their backyards. So support them. $1, $2, $10, $20. It's less than a ticket would be to a concert.
They're very true.
And it can make a huge difference.
Make a huge difference. Now, Albuquerque has a government access TV channel. What's to watch on GovTV these days? Is that mostly a platform to air public addresses by the mayor and other city departments? Or is there entertaining things?
Yeah. Cultural Services oversees all the public access channels. So GovTV always focuses on what the city's doing. But then we have our local origination channel. And they will be airing more and more locally created content from artists and creatives and from our museums and from Explora. So that's a good place to watch as well.
Can anyone send in some content to the channel?
That is a great question. And that is something that we've been working on for a while. And this is just accelerating our problem solving in terms of how can we kind of collect and aggregate content and put it on our local origination channels. So
okay.
We're working on that right now. And so I would say stay tuned. And the thing to know is, like, our public access channels they're aired on Comcast, but we also stream them through the city and the city's channels. So you don't have to be a Comcast subscriber to access GovTV content or the local origination content.
Oh, very good. Very good. Now I want to think about some fun. We can still walk around outside in groups of five or less, of course. So how about something like a scavenger hunt to check out public art across the city? Do we have anything interesting planned to allow people to have fun, learn something new, and educate kids using city resources, all while properly socially distancing?
Well, there are so many things happening. We have an amazing kind of list of things that our team has done. We do encourage people to go and visit public art. I can tell you we're not trying to do anything really organized, because we know that this environment is shifting in terms of how many people we think should be together. So we're being pretty cautious. But there's always an interactive map of public art that's always been accessible through the city website. And now there's that's ramped up just a little bit in terms of, you know, interaction and access. And I would say the best place for us to easily look at all the things we have going is at the ABQ To-Do website.
Okay.
Because we're kind of highlighting different things. We're going to be putting out, like, you know, 5 digital events, you know, for today, each day, to just point people in the right directions. And then your favorite cultural institutions. So if you love Explora, go to their website. They're doing some great things. They're also, they like mobilized really quickly to create some take-home activities that they're distributing at the APS meals locations. So the kids that are getting free lunch are also getting some hands-on activities from Explora. Soon, some of those kids will be getting hands-on activities from the Albuquerque Museum. So, you know, we're partnering in those ways. But if you have a computer at home, you can get onto the library's website. They've got new content, Biopark, Albuquerque Museum, Balloon Museum, Explora, and I'm sure all of the other museums, too. Of course, I'm just listing my favorite ones. But, you know, everybody is really stepping up in these spaces because we have so much amazing content that nobody can see every day anyway, right?
Yeah.
We have amazing collections.
There's
so
too much. Is there
it's
a lot
really
of
great time?
Is there a lot of content out there for kids?
There is. And I feel like a lot of people really understand that, you know, kids are home. I mean, I think the Biopark they actually have a project called Bored Kids Project that they're launching next week.
Okay.
We know that kids are home. We know that parents are home trying to telework or trying to manage, you know, figuring out what's next for them in terms of their income life. And so we're really trying to help kids stay engaged in all of these different spaces. We've got some STEAM experiments from our library. We have a great library science guy, and so we put him on GovTV, and then that's posted on the library website. So there's a lot of interesting things, and I think you just go to your favorite space and you'll be surprised. The other thing that we're interested in doing, and since I have the microphone, I really want to hear what other Albuquerque-based artists and musicians are doing. Like, we would love to know who's streaming a concert from their backyard, or if artists have come up with a new interactive art project, or if they're responding in a new way in this digital space. We would love to hear their ideas. So they can reach out through the ABQ To Do website, or they can just email the department directly and tell us what they're doing, because we want to help kind of know what's going on and then reshare that back to the community.
Yes, or they can call 277-5866 to tell us now. Now, let me ask you a question, because like I said before in the intro, this is growing for perspective for people. So what is this crisis teaching you about your colleagues and the community members?
Well, it is very, for me, it's affirming everything I've known and everything I've felt about the arts and creative community of Albuquerque. I've always felt this was an incredibly connected space. And for my whole 20 years of working in arts, I've always been able to call anyone in this state and they would answer my call or call me back. That is not true in other arts ecosystems around the country. And that is even deeper right now. Like, people are reaching out, they're taking care of each other, they're staying connected to each other. They're trying to, you know, make sure all of the other artists and creatives are okay. They're forming Zoom meetings so that people can be in conversation with each other. There's a lot of powerful emotional care going on, and then problem solving, like, how are we going to get through this? And what does it look like, you know, in 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 2 months, 3 months? So I'm encouraged. And it's hard to stay home because I'm used to being at so many arts events, but I'm hoping to take that energy and spend more time going deeper on websites and of artists that I love and I admire. So I hope everybody else will do the same.
Okay. Let's hope that they do. It's really wonderful to have to already have faith in the community, but then in times of need like this, to see the community truly respond and give you good reason for having that faith in them. Just want to let our audience members know you can find resources, including how to get involved in mutual aid in Albuquerque and Santa Fe, on the webpage for the show. Go to KUNM.org, and it's right at the top. The state hotline for coronavirus is 1-855-600-3453. And we also want to hear from you, listeners. Give us a call, 277-5866, or tweet the hashtag at hashtag Let's Talk NM. So I want to ask to everybody out here, you know, what type of paradigm shifts are you recognizing? Do you see? I've talked to a lot of people, friends and family, who are saying, oh, some people believe that when we go back to normal, other people believe that there is no normal to go back to. This is a new reality and a new way for us to be. So how do you see Albuquerque, Santa Fe, New Mexico moving forward within this new paradigm of how we're living? And this is open to the entire panel.
This is Celinda. I would like to say something about that. I think for me, I know that these are really scary times for some folks, and it's definitely changing our routines and how we interact in the world. But for me, it's been also a time that I felt really inspired by the, like, as we're social distancing, we still have a community bonding that's happening in a way that hadn't been activated before. And the stepping up for each other and taking care of each other that's happening across the state is just absolutely incredible. I networked on the national also with other organizers, and they're hearing, everybody's kind of feeling the same sense of solidarity of protecting each other, making sure that people are not left behind, making sure people are getting what they need, and families having time to be together, having this bonding time for families to sit with each other in a way that hadn't been, we had all been so busy to do before. And so it's heartbreaking that it had to come in this way. And we have to continue to protect each other and stay safe and well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for me, it's been really interesting to see that transition in our community.
Yes. Yes, it has. It has. Anyone else? Well, I'll tell you what.
This is Shell. I would say that for most of us, I think we're starting to feel that connection. But I think everyone is still in the kind of response mode. These changes have been coming kind of, you know, every couple of days for all of us, right? Not only for the community, but for the people that, like in the city and municipal and state governments, that are really trying to make good decisions on behalf of our larger whole. You know, we've every day, every two or three days, we've all had to adjust to a little bit more. So I'm actually like interested in the next week or two when we all kind of settle into this kind of quiet space and a really different way of being, so that we're taking care of our greater community. You know, what do we do at that time then? Because I feel like we've all been, you know, reacting, responding. And I just hope we are going to take the time now that we've all kind of settled into we need to be home to make those extra phone calls, you know, spend the extra time reading things we haven't been able to read before, making sure that our neighbors are okay, especially our older neighbors, and really doing some thoughtful responding instead of just being in react mode, right? So
I understand
that. I'm interested to see what next week looks like.
Because sometimes in react mode, you're seeing a problem and you're addressing it. And sometimes you're not necessarily giving it the thought that's necessary. And something that I believe is, you know, when you spend some time alone and you're forced to spend time alone, you have introspective moments. And that's something that does not escape any of us in our lives, in our human experience. And I feel like people, not only in New Mexico and the country, but across the world, are having those introspective moments. And I'm very interested in seeing what happens as people come out. But we are about to take a quick break. This morning, we're talking what else? Coronavirus, in New Mexico. Is there a heroic or creative coronavirus response you've seen in your community? Are you concerned about shortages of food or supplies for yourself or loved one in coming days? Our phone lines are open. Call 277-5866 or tweet hashtag Let's Talk NM. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 FM. I have a resource for us. Don was good enough to send us a resource at justserve.org. It's a place to post volunteer opportunities and to find out where to volunteer. A great way to connect online. So make sure you go to that if you feel like you want to help the community. justserve.org. You're listening to 89.9 KUNM. I'm Khalil Ekolona. We will be back with this conversation in just 1 minute.
I'm Nash Jones, Morning Edition host here on KUNM, and I'm taking over the breaks this hour to let you know that we here at KUNM understand the need to access up-to-date info and connect on the radio right now more than ever. That's why we're holding this live call-in show all week, and it's why we've quieted down our fun drive that would normally be taking up a lot of space on the air this week. Instead, we're using our short breaks here to let you know we're grateful for any support that you can give us right now. No phone rooms at KUNM this week like you may be used to, but you can give online at KUNM.org. You can also mail a check to KUNM-UNM, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87131. No street address, just KUNM-UNM, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87131. We also, of course, understand that many are in a pretty uncertain financial spot right now, but know that an anonymous donor in Taos has stepped up in to amplify donations of any size this week. It's about the number of donations, not the size of them. So if we get in 10 donations this hour, that anonymous Taos donor will donate $500 to the station. Pretty cool. A big, huge thank you to Daniel Estrada Lopez of Albuquerque, who became a monthly donor this hour, for recognizing the need and doing your part to keep KUNM running when we're needed most and we need you most. Thank you. And now let's get back to Let's Talk New Mexico.
And thank you, Nash. Thank you. Thank you. Nash Jones, the best Morning Edition host this side of the Mississippi. You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm Khalil Ekolona. We're taking every morning this week to talk about coronavirus in New Mexico. Are you staying home right now? Are you still commuting to work? I am. For those of you who are essential industries, what is it like to practice social distancing at your job? Please join the conversation by calling 1-877-899-5866 or email us at letstalkkunm.org. We've got some questions for the listeners out there. How are you coping with the anxieties of the sudden life changes, and how are you staying busy and getting creative about keeping up with loved ones from a distance? Now I'd like to welcome into the conversation Secretary of New Mexico's Aging and Long-Term Services Department, Katrina Hotram Lopez, and Deputy Secretary Buffy Saavedra is on the line as well. Secretary Lopez, Deputy Secretary Saavedra, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Now, Katrina, we spoke earlier this week for the podcast, Your New Mexico Government, and you let us know about what precautions older folks should be taking and how your department is responding to their needs during the crisis. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. We're doing our social distancing, and we check in with our staff, and they're doing social distancing, and they're, you know, it's interesting. They're always worried, not of themselves, but how they can help others, and I'm just so proud to be part of this team.
You all are doing a fantastic job, and I just got a little anecdote. I was taking the art bus home yesterday, and I saw about what to be a 5 or 6-year-old young lady talking to her toddler younger brother, and she was telling him, she said, after you wash your hands, you have to wash your hands. And I thought that was the most adorable thing, because she was just making sure that he was okay. But it led a question to me. You know, we're being told a lot of different things. I feel, and many other people feel, like our state, our governor, and what you're doing, you're informing people as to what to do, the best ways to take care of ourselves. But some people are confused. They want to know how many times they have to wash their hands. They want to know what procedures should they be doing to take extra care of themselves. Where can they go to get a baseline directive of what they should do?
So that's a great question. And on the Department of Health website, the New Mexico Department of Health website, you know, they have links to, you know, hand washing, universal precautions, and with the CDC, they take you through all of those steps and instructions.
Okay.
And really, I would like to remind New Mexico that this governor has really pushed to get ahead of the coronavirus because of all her expertise in the past with running the New Mexico Department of Health. So there's no reason to panic. There's reason to continue to take precaution.
She's doing a fantastic job. Let me throw it to Celinda real quick. You want to give us a prisoner update?
Yeah. So I was... Also, on that note, the Fight for Our Lives Mutual Aid page has lots of resources and information as well as links to the Department of Health. So I just wanted to call that out, too. You can do a one-stop there to get all the information that you need and support, hopefully, and we'll continue to update as things come in. I organize with Millions for Prisoners in New Mexico. We're one of the groups in the coalition right now doing mutual aid, but we're also supporting all of our people behind the walls in New Mexico and across the country. And I just wanted to call out a couple of things that we're hearing from behind the walls and would like for people to, where they have capacity to help engage in pushing forward some of these issues. So in Angola prison in Louisiana, they don't have access to soap or hand sanitizer. People are already sick there, and they actually just did a work stoppage in protest of the lack of resources and that they're being forced to still go to work in the prisons and be in close proximity to each other in some of the prisons across the country. Here in New Mexico, there was a riot on the 20th in Cibola, and it was because prisoners are not getting the information that they need to be healthy. They're not getting the resources that they need, not access to soap, access to food and commissary. There was a suicide that happened in the prison that day as well, who was a lifer. And we just want to always honor when we lose people behind the walls, because so often it's disregarded. And those are our community members as well.
Well, who's ultimately responsible for ensuring that prisoners get the materials that they need, soap, hand sanitizer, that they're taking care of as well?
Absolutely. And so right now we're hearing that the state of New Mexico is not completing releases for people who should be released right now from prisons. They're not getting access to commissary that they're ordering, either because it's out of stock or because the commissary orders are not being fulfilled due to low staffing. Families are very concerned and questioning and not getting the answers that they need about what kind of precautions are the guards taking who are coming in, because visits have been suspended for several weeks. So we know the only way that people behind the walls are getting sick is because of the staff. And so we want staff to be going through a process that everybody else is taking and making sure that they're not bringing in the virus behind the walls where we don't have a substantial healthcare system that can maintain it. And so we also are hearing that prisoners are not getting enough food. Most of them are not getting access to food and are having to share the little bit of commissary that they have. So I just wanted to call out that these are the demands and the issues that are coming from behind the walls from people who don't have a platform to be able to call it out.
Okay. Well, thank you for informing us of that. We're going to look into that. Definitely. We're going to look into that a little bit more. Now, Secretary, your department is working to ensure that our elders have the latest information and like the governor's public health orders for info about how COVID-related scammers, that's going on a lot. I've received a couple COVID-related scam calls already. What is the state doing to inform seniors of how to protect themselves?
That's a great question, because that happens all the time. And so we have been on high alert. We've been working with our providers on getting the information out that if there's somebody that is asking you questions or wanting your Social Security number, don't get it. Call our 1-800 number first, 1-800-432-2080, where we can give you information on, what's current, what's out there, what you can provide, and if your the solicitation you just received is real. So be very cautious and careful with the information that you have, and call our number before giving out any personal information, and we will lead you in the right direction.
Okay, that's very important. Make note of that, everyone. Yeah, I received two calls within the past few days, and I thought it was absolutely ridiculous. Now, your department is thinking of putting together up a drive-up donation system. How does that go? How does that work? People just drive up, drop off the goods that they want to donate, and keep it moving?
That's right. We've actually opened one already. It's at the south in the South Valley Multicultural Center, Multicultural Center, in the driveway there in the parking lot. And they can just drop off donations, which has occurred, and we've received donations already. We will take then and sterilize those items and clean them and then get them out to the people in need. So lots of people have been calling our 1-800 number, 1-800-432-2080, because they need not only a meal or food, but they also need those extra cleaning supplies and toiletries, including toilet paper. And we have had an overwhelming just response to call for volunteers and people wanting to help. And so we thought this was the best way to continue to protect our seniors and adults with disabilities rather than trying to get people interacting in a way that's not socially appropriate at this point.
I understand. That's good work. Now, Deputy Secretary, what do we know about assisted living facilities? How are they weathering this outbreak? Has there been any more reported shortages? We know that New Mexico has a long and awful history of abuses in some elder care facilities. So how can people know and be assured that their relatives in nursing homes are safe? Are regular audits happening? Are they still happening? Do you have to change that up because of staffing issues now because of the coronavirus? This question was for Deputy Secretary.
Yes, I'm on the phone. I'm not sure if you can hear me. Good morning. This is Buffy Saavedra.
Hi,
good deal. So we have had some great innovations that we've worked on, not only with the assisted living facilities, but also across the nursing home facilities in New Mexico as well. And so we've been working with the New Mexico Healthcare Association, as well as the Hospital Association and others, and the Department of Health, to assure that we have what we call communicative devices, and they're in the form of tablets that allow for family members to communicate with their residents that are in the facilities, since they can't go in and see them unless they're in an end-of-life situation. And we also have the ability with those same tablets and devices to do monitoring. And so because of that, that is how our ombudsmen are actually taking in and trying to work with families and the facilities for any concerns that they might have. But we're receiving some really great feedback already on just the ability to communicate. They also have the opportunity for those that are with the Department of Health side that go in and monitor facilities. They are who are still allowed to go in and continue to do that, albeit everybody is taking, you know, the utmost precaution. So right now, we're not hearing that there is a large staffing issue. Hopefully that continues. But the ability for the communication and the oversight right now has been provided virtually. And it's in the form of almost, I think it's 350 to 360 communicative devices that have been distributed and dispersed.
Okay. So we're making sure that that our people in assisted living facilities and our seniors who are in assisted living facilities are taken care of. It's very important. I want to thank you for this work. Now, Celinda, I have a question for you. Well, for everyone. Governor Lujan Grisham mentioned that the stay-at-home order is going to be enforced by police with civil or even criminal charges. Does that possible enforcement have folks in your community concerned? Have you seen or heard any increase in enforcement activity? Do you think that the police are needed to enforce a public health order like this? This is open to the entire panel.
Yes. So this is Celinda, and I organize actively in the southeast of Albuquerque and the south side of town. And we've been concerned ever since Relentless Pursuit was announced by the Attorney General in January. And so we have seen an increase in law enforcement activity in our neighborhood anyway. And we are very concerned about how these things are intersecting with each other. It's very interesting that the Department of Justice called out these seven cities under Relentless Pursuit that we now know that this administration knew about coronavirus back then being introduced in the United States. It's very concerning because we have been under great surveillance already, and we're close to the military base. And so my community is feeling very concerned about the amount of military vehicles rolling around through the southeast of Albuquerque. People send me videos and pictures on a daily of the surveillance that's happening there, both with military vehicles, federal vehicles, along with local state, BCSO, and APD. We have now five enforcement agencies in our neighborhood. And so we are a community that's already been under assault. These conditions have made it even worse. We're working actively to protect unsheltered community who don't have a place to go into in the evenings when, you know, it's suggested that people shelter in place. What do we do when folks don't have shelter? Mm-hmm. And so these are some of the barriers and obstacles that our community is facing, along with, you know, we have a lot of people who don't have access to mental health. And we have a constant surveillance happening that is heightening those conditions when we have BCSO and APD helicopters circling our community every single evening, every day. It is bringing a lot of tension to our community that's already feeling pressured.
Now, speak to that.
And so it's even more layers of difficulty in these conditions.
Speak to that tension that happens. I know a lot of people, I live in a pretty decent neighborhood in the Edo part of town, and there have been many military helicopters to rise up over the weekend, and a lot of my neighbors were concerned. And it hasn't historically had the problems with the police that the South Valley neighborhood has had. Speak to a little bit, briefly, speak to that tension that people are feeling. Like, is this necessary to have these patrols go on like this?
You know, absolutely. I would love to hear from the federal administration a cease and desist of a Relentless Pursuit, but we're not seeing that happening. And with coronavirus now as the biggest issue that our community is facing, the other ones did not go away. And so I'm calling on decision makers both at every level, from municipal all the way to federal, to please help us address this, because we're already a community under attack. And now we have this tremendous health issue upon us. And so how we're able to hold community, we don't have the capacity necessary to be able to help people who are in this crisis. And so we're calling on people, please continue to make donations to mutual aid. We're working on getting hand washing stations to our unsheltered community throughout the southeast right now. But we would like for our decision makers with resources to step up and already provide those things, and to call off the law enforcement presence that is already a problem for us. We don't need more bodies in prisons and jails right now, because we can't even protect the ones that are there. And so definitely helping us to hold all of those pieces in a way that we're standing in our courage and leading with love is the most important and critical thing we could be doing for our communities right now, especially those that are marginalized.
Yes, that is right. Leading with love. That's what everyone on my panel is doing. That's what we're going to need to do together in order for all of us to make it out of this collectively. That's all the time we have for today. I want to thank you to our guests, Celinda Guerrero, Zoe Kraft, Katrina Hotram Lopez, Buffy Saavedra, and Shell Sanchez. Thank you to everyone who called in and sent questions by email or tweet. Tune in each morning this week from 8 to 9 a.m. for a new call-in show with new information about COVID-19. Our coronavirus coverage also includes our new daily podcast hosted by yours truly. Search Your NM Government in iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts for more conversations with experts. public officials, organizers, and even my own mother and father about what they're doing to stay safe. If you've missed part of today's show, you can listen in on KUNM.org or subscribe to the Let's Talk New Mexico podcasts, again, wherever you get podcasts. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Bryce Dix live tweeted the show. Taylor Velasquez screened your calls. Ty Bannerman produced the show like a hero would. And Hannah Colton is our executive producer. I am Khalil A. Colonna. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. Stay safe, be well, and wash your hands.